Hey, I'm Jason Warner Smith. I played Gavin on AMC's The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Golden Spiral Media. Don't turn it off.
Fear, The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 42, The Wrong Side of Where You Are Now Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278. Or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey fans, welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And Brian is not with us this week. He possibly might join us later, but we are going to continue without him. And, some of you have heard of the news. He has some job changes that, he might be moving. And I think we know some that he is moving, but anyways, he's busy. So if he joins us tonight, it'd be awesome. If not, it's going to be with me and Mark, and we're going to take you through this episode. All right. Tonight, we are going to cover season 4, episode 7, The Wrong Side of Where You Are Now.
It was written by Melissa Scrivener Love, directed by Sarah Boyd. And the brief description, it will be: Madison's decision to help an adversary has unintended consequences. John Dory's life hangs in the balance.
Do you want to go with your rating first?
You do yours.
All right. And my rating for this episode was 9.5 chicks with layers.
And my rating would be 9 out of 10 Mel getting blown up in a truck.
And Brian, his rating was 9 spiteful villains that don't have any license.
And now we're going on to listener ratings. Cheryl Rainey Fox gives it 9 out of 10 blown up ambulances. And she corrected me in stating that the truck was an ambulance.
Glennis Goltz, she gives it a 9 out of 10. Come with us if you want to live. But you, Mel, go, because we want to live. And so that leads us into our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
All right, you want to go off, start with our first listener's awesome sauce?
Sure. First listener's awesome sauce will be Cheryl Rainey Fox. Madison throwing Mel out of the stadium and Althea putting the camera down and helping John.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree with that one. Glennis Goltz, her awesome sauce is Alicia's mean rifle with attached grenade launcher, ironically made mincemeat out of the ambulance, and poor Mel.
Yeah.
And she also gave a second awesome sauce was, the two timelines are forever narrowing.
Thank goodness.
I know, it took this long, but I do see the light at the end of the timeline. All right. Well, that was all our listener awesome sauce. Do you want to go with yours?
Yeah, I have a few pinpoints. Alicia using that grenade launcher on that gun to take out Mella. He leaves the fight. That was awesome in itself. Come on.
Yeah.
Got to see somebody get blown up and then cooked.
I like the fact that at least I never saw it on there. Like, I didn't know she had that capability. So when she did, I was like, wow.
Yeah, it goes into something I'll lead into later. But oh my goodness, I was just like, that is cool.
Everyone likes grenades.
Yeah, right. The second one would be the Walker bomb the Vultures used at the stadium. Been done before with the governor and the Walking Dead in one small truck. And then again, with the wolves, had a trap like that in The Walking Dead as well, where they had them all on trucks and it was kind of a trap.
Oh, yeah.
But this was awesome because it was more trucks. And we learned something about the flags and how many of the Zeds that they have. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And that leads into what I was just stating before, which would be the numbered flags, and we find out exactly what those numbers represented. So there were key area and locations where they had Zeds stored away, so they could use these as pretty much like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And Naomi kissing John Dory on the forehead before she leaves to get the medical supplies for him from the stadium. That was really cool and sweet.
Yeah, that was. that actually, like the number of flagged ones, I mean, I talked about it later, but I'll just bring it up now. But like I wanted to go through and see exactly what that number was, because that was pretty awesome to see that they obviously had kind of a plan, you know, in place of like, I don't know, just like they thought about collecting the walkers and putting them in places, I guess, but not necessarily, who knows if this was always going to be the outcome. But all those flags that Strand and Cole found, and it totaled, at least as what I could count, was like 3,035. So that's, wow. Yeah, like all those numbers. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's that's a problem. But that was awesome.
Especially those Zeds that they had that were from the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was filled with all the oil, and they used that as pretty much a weapon in itself. They were just walking weapons.
Yeah, that was awesome. Just like, and then that leads me then into my awesome sauce, was like Morgan grabbing Al's camera, telling her to help John. It was like, he was all like, stop it, Al. Like, just tell her, like, stop doing that. Come help. And then Alicia dispatching Mel, crawling out of the wambulance. I don't know. That just, to me, was awesome. And then the title card. Or the intro. Again, we're seeing all these new, you know, whatever, like they're variations of just like something that is about that episode that we're about to see. And to me, I'm loving that aspect of it. It's so much fun.
It's so small and so minute, but it creates kind of like almost an atmosphere for the actual show itself.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing those like, they must have been CG'd animated Zeds that are walking, because you could see that they're stumbling and everything.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen, I don't know, I didn't really pay attention to the crawl, the actual lettering, but I had mentioned it before, but I don't know if you paid attention, if it was deteriorating.
I did actually pay attention more so on this one, because I remembered you bringing up that comment a few episodes back, but to me it looks still the same. So
yeah,
like
it could have been my mind thinking, oh, okay, they're gonna go the same route as the main show, but it's fine. Yeah. I like the idea that it's different, though, in the sense that they have something different that we see in the very beginning with mm-hmm. just the words itself. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot too. All right. Well, then that was all that we had. Brian actually had the cold open. Was great. That was his awesome sauce. And now on to our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
All right. So our first listener's weak sauce comes from Cheryl. You want to go with that?
Sure. Cheryl Rainey Fox says, probably the fire at the stadium. We don't see it yet, but do the walkers walk through it, catch fire, and go up to the stadium and help catch it on fire? Good question.
Mm-hmm.
I believe somebody threw something to ignite the walkers as they did, but from my understanding and from what I watched, it looked like they were kind of like, as they were burning, they were literally smearing themselves on whatever
yeah.
the facade or the gates, as it were, and creating that to burn. That was my impression of what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of was they laid the little track of obviously oil or whatever from that one. I want to call it the clown car because it looks like whatever that video game. Yes. And so then they let that on fire. And then when all the walkers are coming, which we know were from those tanks, and then you see Madison's face gets brighter and brighter and brighter. Mm-hmm. They were already covered. And as soon as they crossed that line, they ignited. And then, of course, they're just going to continue and touch the walls and, you know, like start, yeah, causing everything more to fire.
Yeah.
So. I mean, hopefully we'll find out next episode or actually see what was going on.
I want to see so bad.
Yeah, me too. All right. Next listener is Glynis Goltz. And she says, a small gripe about Alicia and Nick just sitting in the SUV at the Diamond waiting to be surrounded rather than getting the hell out of Dodge. But either way, we know the two of them make it out alive because they're in the now timeline. It's Madison that we're not so sure of her outcome. So I guess there's still tension and suspense created.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think overall we can agree that one of the weak sauces is what's up with Madison after all this time. But you know, we'll deal with that later. All right, and that was all our listeners' weak sauce, and on to ours. And Mark, you want to take it?
Yeah, it's totally lame, man. It's totally lame. My weak sauce would be taking Charlie. I know that Morgan was trying to do the right thing, but I'm sorry, that kid is bad news. She's come on, she killed Nick.
Yeah,
and on top of that, what, Luciana hesitates, and then she turns around. The kid's gone. Was she a magician or something? It was like doing the hand thing and then just flying away.
Yeah, we know Charlie seems to have that disappearing act very well, well done, because she's done it many times. And I thought during that whole gun battle, like all of a sudden – she just pops up out of nowhere, and like, I was like, where have you been this whole time? Like, yeah. Aren't you on the, like, with Mel on the, the RV? And then what? You're just running around saying hi to people? I don't know. It was.
Yeah, I know. It's like weird. She's the opposite of Newt from Aliens. Newt was really crawling through everything, hiding away from the aliens. And then she was able to get away from Ripley and Hicks. And in this case, no, the good guys or our people we think are good, and then she's like being elusive beyond them and then getting them into more trouble or doing something wrong.
Yeah. Well, then that leads me into my weak sauce, which is Charlie. I mean, she's shown that she can't be trusted, but people still give her a break. And so I'm like, I guess it's the, oh, we just don't kill kids factor. I'm like, come on. Like, we already just tell her to look at the flowers.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's time. This whole episode, we saw from then and now how many times she's just screwed them over. And I'm kind of having a hard time with her anyway.
Yeah.
And then Al pulling up on Alicia when she had the sights on Naomi, like she opens up her truck guns, but like, I don't know. I was kind of like, as close as she was, like, I don't see how, at least as far as I understand how those guns work on her truck, that she could have even shot Alicia. Like the angle and the proximity of Alicia to those guns, like, I feel like all she had to do was just like basically take two steps forward and then they're gonna just be shooting above her head, and she could have just still shot Naomi or even just like, stop, drop and roll and then take out Naomi. Like,
yeah,
there's no way she would have been hit. So
there's no aiming feature on that. It's like, hold on, I'm going to put these sights on this person. And no, she doesn't have that ability.
No.
Literally, like, she'd just be raining bullets.
Yeah, I just feel like she just rocks it back and forth. But it's like, unless those guns are pointing like more straight down, I don't know. To me, it was just unrealistic. But I'm like, hey, she's got this big SWAT truck with machine guns, which is cool. I just didn't think that was enough to stop Alicia.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was the rest of mine. Brian had some weak sauce, and he said, this episode is dependent on the characters not being eloquent. Chris Hardwick brings up that Mel doesn't tell them exactly what Ennis is going to do, and Kevin Zegers says that Mel doesn't know exactly what Ennis will do, but I will contend that he knows what Ennis could do, and that bringing trucks full of walkers is one of them. And he also says, why don't Alicia and Nick drive away when they could? They just sit there. Isn't there another entrance to the stadium? And I agree with that, too, because when they were on the radio with Madison, and she was like, where are you? And they're like, oh, we're still a half mile out. And they're looking at all those trucks. I kind of thought, it was like, well, couldn't they like come through the back entrance? Like, yeah. Wouldn't you think there would be like multiple entrances to that, to the stadium? But I guess they maybe only had one.
I'll do the next two if you want.
Okay.
What about using the horn? Apparently, that's what Brian's thinking. What about using the horn? You know, just to catch somebody's attention. Pretty much almost like that one episode when everything went awry and you had the truck driver slumped over and honking. Kind of like not too many episodes ago where the truck went down.
Yeah.
that little ravine, kind of like Zombieland, when it just like you see the truck at the very end.
Yeah.
In this case, the horn was going off and Morgan was stuck with Nick.
No.
And then they were...
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, and then he does another one where he says, they still don't answer the question of where's Madison? Emphatically, just like Brian. They still don't answer the question of where's Madison? And I really am on that camp as well, too, people. They can't answer that question because they don't ask the question of where's Madison in the now time. It's a mystery by omission. And I think Brian and you and I actually talked about this last mm-hmm. time because nobody's actually saying anything in the show. You don't see Alicia or Strand or at the time Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Luciano say anything about Madison. That wasn't even brought up to the vultures on the standoff.
Yeah. Good point.
You know, so it's wacky.
It's, I mean, obviously the writers or this is what they are trying to use to just like, I don't know, make us.
It's a Gimple gate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Scott Gimple. I have to call you like Watergate. It's Gimple gate. You're hiding certain things from us. And you did this the last time. Mm-hmm. Remember in season 7 of The Walking Dead? You really put one over on us where you left it at the very end and all we saw was blood splatter over. Well, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't leave us on a cliffhanger. Cliffhangers don't do well with your fan base.
Yeah, all I know is next episode, and this is a mid-season finale, that question needs to be answered, and then that's it. Drop it. No more.
And it better not be at the very end of the episode. Come on. You can't be like, oh, here she comes walking out.
Yeah.
No, that's not the answer. Do it at the very beginning of the episode, at least, so we have an answer and not have to wait how many months until August?
Yeah. Oh, they better. We'll see, because that's the one thing that I feel like is bringing down the show. Overall, is just the way they're playing this, because it leads to so many problems. Like, why are they all in the SWAT van and Al's asking them questions, but that's the one thing that's not being asked, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
it's just, come on. Like, yeah. So we'll see.
We're all disgruntled.
Yep. All right. Well, that is the rest of our weak sauce. On to sad sauce. Aww. All right, Mark. We didn't have any listener sad sauce that I saw. You want to go with yours?
Sure. My sad sauce will be not seeing what happened with Madison at the stadium. It's more of anger sauce than it is sad sauce, but it's honestly, it is sad because it's a letdown. We figure by now we at least get some sort of inkling or answer of what's going on with her, but we don't even get that even just before the midseason. Mm-hmm. So them leaving us on a cliffhanger is really sad.
I agree with that, but then also part of my sad salsa was just the scene of seeing the glow of the flames on her face at the end, and just here we are getting to this point, you know, finally in the story of like what's going on with the, you know, the vultures and the, you know, the standoff, and then what's going to happen with the stadium. But it was just that scene of just seeing Madison with, it looked like this like sheer terror in her face as her face gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and you know what's coming towards her. So that look on her face to me, it was heartbreaking. It's like, oh, her home is about to be destroyed.
Now we're on to what sauce, and this will be listener what sauce.
What?
Cheryl Rainey Fox says, Mel is gone? I'm sorry to see him go, and the way Alicia killed him, cold-blooded.
That was my awesome sauce. I wasn't so much of what, I was like, ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That was all our listeners' what sauce that we got. I didn't really have a what sauce, so I'll give Brian's, and then you can go with yours.
Sure.
And Brian's what sauce was Talking Dead was recorded weeks ago. Both Coleman Domingo and Kevin Zergis mentioned the panel they did this week in Nashville that happened May 12th and 13th.
Huh.
Yeah.
That was done fairly early.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I due to time constraints, I don't always get to watch The Talking Dead, so I didn't get to – I could see
– Yeah. Yeah, that it's really weird how they would just record that early. And, that's kudos to those people that were in the audience because they had to watch the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't, them not being able to.
Yeah, exactly. My what sauce would be that grenade launcher on Alicia's gun. That was something out of G.I. Joe or Aliens. What was that? I've never seen anything like that. That was amazing. It's like, okay. The only thing I remember that was from like a G.I. Joe cartoon when he goes, oh, you have a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, okay, Snake Eyes, there you go.
Well, that's like, I guess maybe then that's where I could add my what sauce to, you know, like go with that was I never even saw that was a, you know, grenade launcher like on their gun. Just to me, like all the guns that they've been using and firing, it's like I never saw that. So when she pulls that out, I was like, wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, like it's like, okay, she's not playing around, although that might have been the only grenade that she had.
But, I think so.
Yeah, but it was just like it popping out there and just dropping on the ground and the whambulance was destroyed.
All right. Apparently, we got some listener feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
Cheryl Rainey Fox's feedback would be, much to the unpopular, I'm loving the storytelling this season. I like the flashbacks and the unfolding of this story. It gives us just a bit of a story each night and surprises me every week. It keeps me wanting more. Which... yeah, it does for everybody. You know, I'm looking forward to it, but it's like, it's kind of like The Inquirer. I want to know.
I mean, I have to agree, at least on the, ever since the season started, I've been very like hooked and I do want to know more. And, you know, I'm like, I don't want to be critical and all that. I mean, I am, you know, we do a podcast on the show. And so, I mean, there are some things that are just kind of like, I kind of wish they did that a little differently or like, you know, we still have these questions that I feel like could have been answered better, but I'm enjoying the back and forth that we've been getting. You know, I enjoy when we get to see the before and just the way the treatment is, and then we get the now. So, I mean, I'm going along with it, and I'm definitely, you know, it's like it's intriguing me. So I am enjoying most of the storytelling.
It's really the story for me in general. It's like we want to know, we want to continue, we want to turn that page. And with this, we have to wait every week in order to see the next, you know, chapter or little short story of what's going on within these characters. So that's it's kind of like the main show too in itself. It's like we want to know exactly where it's going to go after this, which we'll talk about later on with some news that we got.
All right. Our next listener's feedback comes from Glennis Goltz, and she says this was a good episode and advanced the plot along nicely. It's interesting that Morgan, Naomi, Charlie, and Athea are now in conflict with Alicia, Luciana, and Strand. That will make for an interesting confrontation at the Diamond, and hopefully the next episode.
Yeah. Naomi is going to have problem getting a word in edgewise to explain herself with Alicia's itchy trigger finger at the ready. So there'll be a need for a standoff of sorts of the SWAT trucks, saws versus weapons of rifles and grenade launchers trained on each other, while they can all explain themselves. Charlie will either need to stay in the SWAT truck or hide behind Morgan, or Luciana will surely kill her. Really?
I think she might have had a chance already, but
it's like Morgan or Luciana will surely kill her. I don't know.
Morgan won't, but Luciana.
No, yeah, I don't think he could take himself to killing a child. Look at what happened with Dwayne and how it affected him, and then hearing about Carl.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's everything that from his past. And you got Luciana. Yeah, Luciana, yeah, she's full of rage, but she's looking at the kid. But she had that connection with Nick back where they were away at that camp. And seeing how Nick loved children and knew how Nick cared for Charlie. So I'm not sure if Luciano could actually push herself to do that with Charlie, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I feel like that she could possibly, but it would have to be just depending on what the circumstances. Like if Charlie somehow, you know, like, backstabs her again or something. But I think, but I think Luciana, and we've seen her when she gives the book to her and, you know, in the before and her basically having that pause, even though this is the girl that just killed Nick, that she kind of had a moment to like, I don't know what she's maybe thinking, but, maybe that might be some way that she's feeling that like, Nick wouldn't want her to do that. I don't know. I think at that point, though, I'm at the point where Charlie's kind of backstabbed everybody multiple times in various ways that I think she's not one to like keep around or lock her up.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Continue.
All right, we're going to continue. And she also says, this all begs the question of the MSF of season 4, episode 8. We'll explain what happened to Madison, or leave us with the cliffhanger where Madison appears out of the dusk, gloom, or such cinematic event to reveal she's alive after all. I don't know. It's like a lot of us have that deep gut feeling of maybe she is dead. And then there's that feeling of that whole dread of, oh, okay, this was a misdirection. She's alive. And how is she alive? Where is she alive? And where has she been all this time? And the biggest letdown for me would be, oh, she was with the vultures all that time. And I really don't want that, but that was the first thing that came to my mind whenever, ever since they said she disappeared, she became a hipster vulture. And I we already saw that with Naomi, but you know, you would think Naomi would say, oh, well, your mom's over there, you know, because she's already with John Dory and she already spoke to Alicia. But maybe Alicia already knows that. She doesn't have to point that out. But hence how some of the writers have been. You would think they would throw that in there because, okay, we're going to be obvious to this and dictate this to the, you know, to the actual viewing audience. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's going to be a weird situation.
I hope they don't make it a cliffhanger to where it's the very last scene and it's all of a sudden she just starts walking out of whatever. And then it's like, we're left to just sit there and be like, okay, so she's alive or what, you know, where, like, I hope they give some kind of a story to, you know, this, I don't know. It's, well, I'm assuming we're going to find out next week.
Yeah, we need some answers.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was all Glenn's feedback. Catcraft, she dropped some feedback on us at the last minute that I got in. So here are my thoughts. Where is Madison? She's in the stadium, dead woman walking, I hope. I was never a Madison fan, and without Nick, I am ready for them to wrap up the Clark family's drama. Alicia is turning out to be a pretty good unhinged badass, and I think the show can carry on with her in that role. Who will carry the show without Nick and Madison? JD, Morgan, and Naomi, with Strand and Al as strong supporting characters. With all John Dory's love going around, they can certainly write him as a lead. The relationship between JD and Morgan and JD and Naomi provide plenty of story to explore. Al's video library, Strand's reaction to the loss of the Clarks, and the next big challenge the group faces can drive what will essentially be another Fear the Walking Dead reboot. The big problem would be reboot fatigue. Just like with The Walking Dead, too many characters changes and a reworking of the story could really kill the show. And she parentheses two. I hope that Scott M. Gimple's too cool for school influence doesn't frack up Fear the Walking Dead just when it's gotten really good. All that said, I could be completely wrong, and this isn't a prediction, just wishful thinking.
Had to use that BSG word in there.
Yeah, that's always my go-to. That way I don't have to bleep it out.
Same here. No, I do agree with her in the aspect of they could actually create a... they had the Rick Darrell bromance where they were leading in the main show. Mm-hmm. And they can now do that with John Dory and Morgan, but to strip the whole show of the original cast... Mm-hmm. And then just leave it with Morgan, Dory, Naomi, Al, and what, Charlie? I don't know. It would be a re-envisioning of the show, and I don't think the former cat. I don't think Coleman Domingo would want to leave, or Alicia would want to leave, or Kim Dickens would want to leave at this point. You know, there's so much there, unless they're going to do a Deadwood reunion and Kim runs off and does that. And then Alicia finds herself in a major motion picture, but I can't see Coleman Domingo running from this, at all.
Yeah. I couldn't see him just being like, I'm done.
Yeah. They invested so much time and they want to continue it on. But you know, I do like what Kat had to say. You know, it's a different approach, and a lot of people don't like Madison. I do. But the thing is that, you know, I would really like to see what happens with that character.
Yeah. It took me a while to warm up to her because I just felt like, I don't know if it was just the way they were writing her character in the beginning, but then season three, I came around to her a lot more, but it just seemed like they were playing so much of just like the mommy, like, overbearing role, which, I mean, she still has that now, but it's just like, I don't know, just like a different way that she's not just like controlling her kids. And like, remember whenever, like, on season two, like, you know, she knew Nick was out there because he went to go walk with the dead. And then mm-hmm. here they are, like, I totally just forgot because he's dead. Madison's, her boyfriend, Travis. See how long I've already forgot about him.
Everybody forgets him. I liked him.
But when he comes out of, like, the, you know, out of the dark, and they're at the hotel, and of course her first, like, thought, because he was like, no, he just went out there or whatever, is to go flip on the lights of the hotel to make everybody and the dead a big beacon, like, hey, just because Nick will find us. And she did so many stupid things. But now I feel like it's not even like along those lines anymore. And just so I've definitely grown more accustomed to Madison, and I'm enjoying her character. For her to be gone, I could see life without Madison, but then it's like, is that then leave Alicia, you know, to be kind of like the you know, image of Madison, you know, because she's the daughter of the original cast, basically. And so I don't know. I mean, I can see them going a different route, and then maybe, yes, that does require the Clarks to somehow either step away, go off into the sunset, and then, or, you know, whatnot. But I still feel like the show was all based around them, and it almost kind of like The Walking Dead, where it was Rick and Carl, because that's kind of how the comics were, that there should at least be some little bit of, like, the family dynamic, you know, the bloods, you know, to be part of the story, because that's something everybody can relate to, you know, like, you know, connection. It's like, well, yeah, that's mom and daughter, you know, that's still a really deep connection than just like, oh, I just a survivor to survivor, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just that adds a lot of feelings and, like, you know, drama and tension. So,
well, it's almost similar to the Rick and Carl relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. They try to, they're rehashing certain things with these characters, but to give some sort of feeling into it, because everybody can relate. The Strand character in itself is a bit different, a little bit manipulative, but not as maniacal as, let's say, Negan or certain characters. But, you know Strand as a person, and you start to see him, and he did a flip-flop and a big change between season 3 and season 4 at this point. So he was, you know, towards the end of season 3, he started changing, where he was trying to do things for the best for other people, but also doing for himself as well. And they kind of brought that to up to date recently when he showed, well, when he talked to Madison and about his getaway truck. And then she having using said getaway truck at the very end of the last episode before this past one that we're talking about.
Well, and also we still have characters out there that we don't know what happened. You know, we have Daniel, you know, is he, will he come back, you know, at some point, or is he completely just, we just won't know. Walker and, what's his face? His
Tataka.
Tataka. Yeah. Like, you know, they,
Taka no Taka.
I mean, they're still out there from the dam, you know, like, they helped, you know, they helped them, you know, when they were doing a little sniping to keep Nick, you know, alive. And then, so I don't know. There's,
I think a lot of those characters were written off kind of, like, as they walked off in the sunset in a sense, because we have not seen or heard anything of their names really in this season at all. I think they kind of wrote off Daniel Salazar, and they wrote off Tataka Those were really good characters in my feeling for last season. Mm-hmm. And I started liking Taka a lot. And I've always loved Sal, you know, Daniel was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whether or not Ruben Blades or Blades, however you call it, use his last name, but I like calling him Blades. But, he's a great actor, singer, politician. and you know, he's a great actor, and I really would like to see him come back and as that character, but to have him come all the way from where they were to Texas.
Yeah, no, that's
how they would have to explain a lot.
Yeah, that's true. And basically we already should know, like, we know the answer. It's the old showrunner is gone, the new showrunners and Gimple in the behind the curtain. So that pretty much answered my question. They're not coming back ever.
Yeah. Scott M. Gimple is the little wizard behind the curtain.
Yep. Yes, he is. Alrighty. Well, that was all of our listeners' feedback that we got. And we can go on to ours.
Mostly you.
Yeah, it looks like it. I was kind of looking. You can always jump in. I already talked about the flags that, you know, they're just like, I wanted to know exactly what the number of walkers that Innis, you know, collected. And, you know, it does not that it's like would have anything to really do with the story, but, you know, here's another little like blip of like the vultures and maybe how they operate though. It's like they were saying, it's like, oh yeah, there were more of these tanks all the way up the rail, you know, well, I guess wherever this railroad tracks, or, you know, if there's a border or, you know, like some kind of barrier of, as far as they've gone. But it's like, how big are the vultures? Were they really just all like just nomads and they just kind of whip around and around and around? And if they come across somebody, then they're like, okay, you know, we'll do our little waiting game, which was stupid. But, you know, like, I wonder, like, how much more organized they are that we're just not seeing. And I mean, I tend to feel like that they're not. They were just kind of maybe several different groups that just kind of were helping each other, and they just go grab stuff and then maybe meet together at like some central location and then kind of like divvy up whatever they found, but still not, no allegiances. Or were this, because that seems, wouldn't that seem like that's a lot of work to like just store walkers.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then all, you know, every little area, you know, collect them and put them in somewhere and just write the number, you know, like, to me, just seems very much more organized than just a bunch of just random hipsters just terrorizing people.
Well, I'd like to add to that in some way. It's kind of weird because when Mel came along with Innis and the rest of them, they were just sitting there and waiting for the stadium to fall. Now, mind you, they say that, oh, we just pick up the scraps of what's left over. And with what Innis wound up doing at the very end was literally creating destruction. What is there going to be left for any of them once everything is burnt down?
Yeah.
And what food would there be or anything to that effect that they could take from these people that when they were alive in the stadium was still sturdy? So was this a desperate act, or do they do this all the time just to destroy and take what little they can?
Yeah.
Because that's more of not a vulture, but almost like a hawk. I'm going to swoop down and I'm just going to do this. And where, you know, it seemed like Mel had a problem with Innis doing that. And that's why they ran into those issues previously in the flashback where I guess Mel and Innis got into it and Mel drove back and Charlie was there and they helped Mel out. And I guess Mel felt, oh, I could trust them to help me, or maybe Charlie did at that point. But what is going to be left for them to really pick and salvage? Are they just there to just destroy?
Yeah. Well,
you know, is this Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome or something? It's like this. I'm waiting to see Bartertown. You know, we already saw a portion of that in the main show.
Yeah.
With the junkyard people.
I mean, I guess one of the ways I kind of it struck me was that Mel and Ennis were basically not always on the same side. And, you know, Mel would want to do things a certain way, and Ennis probably was like a little more impatient. But then just because, you know, there was the comment from Mel about the people at the tank or the tankers where Madison found Naomi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he mentioned that he was just all like, you know, we warned them about the gas or like sockets or gaskets or something like that. And, you know, it seems like that they do kind of at some point, or part of their MO is, you know, if they can't get exactly what they want or if it's too soon, they'll nudge it along for the group, whatever group that they're trying to wait out to fall. The Weebles and stuff like that. So maybe Mel had a certain way of doing it, and then Ennis just had his way, and that's where their maybe that's what their fights were over, and you know, like I don't know,
clashing.
Yeah,
they were clashing as brothers, and their own ideas of how to do it to get anything out of these people or get these people to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Mel's idea was, all right, we're going to wait until they move on because they're going to have to move away from the stadium and leave whatever's left, and we'll take whatever's left. And then Ennis's attitude would be kind of like almost like a Negan attitude where I'm just going to force them to get out of there and I'm going to take whatever's left, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. And I guess we'll never find out that full story unless, you know, next episode we obviously are going to see what the outcome is, but... my next thing that was on my list was the exchange between Mel and Madison when she was throwing them out. And I kind of went in and like rewatched it with captions to get like, you know, get exactly kind of what he said. But, you know, he was, you know, at the stadium and they were treating him, but he was like tied down or whatever. But Mel is saying something like, he's like, you're holding on to something that's gone. You're trying to be the type of people that are extinct. And Madison's response was, no one's gone till they're gone. And I mean, we've seen this kind of a, I don't know if it's a theme, but I don't know. I just felt like it's like on the main show, I don't feel like we've seen groups or anything too much like this. I mean, I might be wrong, or at least I, you know, it's been maybe too long since I remember some of those past seasons, but I just thought it was interesting. It's like, here's Madison's and her side, or at least what she's wanting to do. It's like, no, everybody's worth something. Everybody's worth saving. Everybody's got something to give. But then on Mel's side, it's like, okay, that civilization's gone. Like there are no more rules, or it's like, you know, like, quit trying to be like he was trying to like harp on her being like, no, like that world is over, like join us and like stop doing this, like there's no point. So I don't know, it was interesting. This whole season's kind of been that little back and forth, you know, with the Vultures and Madison.
It's almost like the Doomsday Generation trying to talk to the past, kind of like when Rick didn't know what he was getting into in season one with the Vatos. Remember the Vatos?
Yeah, yeah.
They were taking care of the old people, and you know, they were willing to give up their lives for the elderly that they were taking care of in that encampment when they took Glenn, and they said, oh, we got a mean dog, and and it was a Chihuahua. And but, you know, and then they've had to deal with the hospital crew that took Beth at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And they were trying to do things in a good way in their own right that was thinking one way, but they were also literally keeping captives for themselves. Oh, you got to work this off. You have to work this out to get what you want. All these people were coming up with their own societies to create almost a right for the and a reasoning for the way they're living. And it doesn't seem to reflect in any way some sort of social structure to how the world was before. It only suits their needs at times, and they're ignoring others. Like with the Vatos, they were just more or less worried about, and they'll do anything for those people, those elderly people. Now, mind you, they wouldn't go around and just kill people blatantly.
Right.
Obviously,
right.
They took Glenn in, and they kind of made it look like to Rick and the gang.
Yeah, that he was hostage and in danger.
Exactly. And then, with Beth, I forgot his name, that got away, that Beth helped get away. Noah.
Or Noah. No, yeah.
Yeah, you were right, Noah. You know, they had their own ideas, and then, when it came to a point of a standoff, there was an issue, and it resulted in Beth's death, and then them having to walk away from that. And then, the wolves coming in and infiltrating, they're just ravagers. My idea, you know, they were just crazed people that were just going to take whatever they want from whoever they wanted. Whereas in Alexandria, they were trying to live a modest lifestyle and then take in certain people, whoever, you know, they could. And then you have the saviors, and they have their own twisted ways based upon Negan's gaslighting and logic and thought of being a dictator. And sometimes that doesn't work out, which we've seen the very end of season 8. And Rick's thought of a community or various communities work out. But of course, then we have that ending at season 8 where Maggie wants to go against Rick in some way, which we won't know until season 9.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a never ending consequences of, like people's idealistic thought of how to survive in this world. And we're getting a bunch of variations of this.
Yeah.
I like the idea. But the thing is that there's gotta be something that's going to tip the edge a bit to keep us glued to these TVs more, you know?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, I guess it was more of the interaction of like, or maybe even just trying to figure out the vultures when they first even showed up on, you know, on the scene. It was just, there's Mel and his, or about at least his group, you know, they're so just like, no, like this, like, join us. You're stupid and even wasting your time. And I guess seeing that interaction, I don't know, it was kind of like, now it's like some of the things that you were talking about. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Yeah. That's exactly, you know, kind of this, you know, the same kind of deal. But I guess maybe I was thinking it wasn't, where are we actually seeing like the characters having like some actual kind of like philosophical discussion about it, like trying to convince each other, like, no, you're wrong. And then she's like, no, you're wrong. And the whole like, you know, you're not dead until you're dead, or gone until you're gone. But
we actually saw that too in season 3 with, was it Kalataka or Tataka? I keep forgetting. And then you get the RV people.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, they all have their own mindset and their idea. But the thing was, is that was based upon, that was our originally Outland, Indian land. Mm-hmm. And, the white people took it with their RVs. And, they just wanted what was theirs, and it was like an ongoing battle from days past till, you know, in the aftermath in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, we're seeing a variation, and I don't think anybody's actually broken that down before. I just started thinking that recently, and I'm like, wait, both shows actually have diverse thoughts on how people could survive and their way of thinking of surviving in some sort of social platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these shows, and nobody's really been talking about that much, I noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
You had another one.
Yes. When I was writing all this stuff, it's kind of like, it kind of got a little jumbled, like with my thought process, but along with just seeing the interactions between, you know, Madison and Mel, and there's basically like, give up on your stupid thought or way of life. But it was just made me also think, it's like, what happened to Mel and his brother that got him to this point? 'Cause it just seems like, you know, taking, you know, like surviving by not grouping together, like in one place, like just constantly scavenging. I don't know. I just feel like that's not something that could really continue for very long. You know, it just seems like at some point you would run out of steam because there would be only so many places that you could like scavenge from, so many groups that you could like try to get stuff from, because obviously other groups are going to be ones that fight back. That, you know, it's just like that whole thought of just like, no, like we're on our own and we're just going to keep going and going and just doing whatever, to like, why not join Madison's group? You know, like there's a place, you know, you guys could actually work together and like create a community. And yeah, it just makes me want to know more about the story, but I guess we're never going to find out because it looks like they're on the chopping block, especially Mel. So the other part, at least the last thing that I added, was what did Morgan mean when he was talking to Al in the SWAT vehicle at the end when they were going towards, or at, you know, in front of the stadium in the now? And he was going up to Al and he was like, I think I know who you are. And then she was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I think I've seen it. And then she's like, yeah, you definitely don't know who I am because I'm a chick with layers, which I thought was just like weird but funny, which was also my, you know, part of my rating. And so yeah, I mean, I like we talked a little bit before, and you brought up that he's probably referring to Carol as yeah, you know, just kind of the same kind of, you know, type of person that he's obviously, you know, experienced, and that, you know, Carol was a very, you know, like I would say quiet and reserved, like, you know, didn't want to get involved or like, you know, whatnot. And then, you know, when the time seemed to come that like she needed to do something, Carol always stepped up, and Al seems to be doing the same. She wants to document everything. I feel like she feels that there's a value in what she's doing. Cause she even like, I think, hands the camera to Charlie to say, no, you know, here, just record everything no matter what. You know, and then I think Morgan was just like, no, or like, you know, like, why are you doing that? Just like, that doesn't matter. And she was like, no, somebody, you know, somebody might want, you know, want to see this, you know, what happened here and know about it. But it's her letting go. Actually, it's like her now actually being a part of the story, which is interesting because that's not how she's been acting. And that leads to a lot of other questions about her.
yeah, like I said to you before, it's like when you brought that up, the first person that came to my mind who would Al remind Morgan of would be Carol, because who did he get close to? Mm-hmm. And who did he know that was somewhat different on the outside amongst other people, but can change and do something in a heartbeat just to do something right or act? And that, and Al's already shown that, what, 2 or 3 times already?
Yeah, totally. Well, did you have anything else to add?
No.
All right. We are going on to news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right. Fear the Walking Dead for this episode. Brian posted this in the Facebook group, so I will just read what he had posted, because the ones that we had were from last week's. And he said, the ratings are in and they are low. In fact, these ratings are at a series low. Fear the Walking Dead got a 0.60 in the 1849 demo with a 1.971 million viewers. Talking Dead only got a 0.13 in the 1849 with 515,000 viewers. The NBA finals were on, but I'm guessing many people forgot it was on. I expect ratings will be better in the Live Plus 3 and the Live Plus 7 coming out. And I'm sure on the group there's like the charts that he had posted. But yeah, I forgot the NBA finals, which I do not watch. So I was not one of those, you know, viewers. And I do tend to think that the Plus 3, if anything, the Plus 3, which is what, the 3 days after it's aired, I think most people really, you know, watch a lot of stuff, you know, days later on their DVR. I record like everything, so that way usually weekends I can watch all of the week's shows that I love. And that was all for that we had for the ratings. I'm hoping next week will be better because it is the mid-season finale and so some questions. There was some news, and I will wait until next episode. Maybe we can like dive deep in there. Maybe we'll get some more information. But apparently, Andrew Lincoln has been reportedly or has been reported that he is going to be in, what was it, 6 episodes in season 9?
It's speculated that, just like Lauren Cohan, she's set for 6 episodes. It's speculated that Andrew is only doing 6 episodes himself. There are talks about possibly an offer to Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl Dixon, to take a $20 million increase or pay to take the lead position of The Walking Dead. All this is definitely through speculation. A leak was sent to Collider, and that's who actually launched it, and then comicbook.com jumped on with the same. And it's been ongoing. Everybody's amok about this because I watched Trav's channel on YouTube, and he's been going through that. Make a Path Presents on YouTube definitely finds information as well. So I've been following this on and off over the past week, and I had tweeted out to Galen Hurd. All I got was a no comment, because obviously they can't comment at this time. So until we get an official AMC, you know, some sort of quote stating, yes, Andrew Lincoln, but I have a funny feeling they will not do anything for a while unless it really heats up, because for the longest time, years ago, it was, if Daryl Dixon dies, we riot. But they do forget that the story is about Rick Grimes from the Prime show. So there are fans like Brian, myself, that love Rick Grimes. Now, I, for one, wouldn't stop watching the show because I started watching the show from day one.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the advertisements. I wasn't in a great place at that time. And, it was something that got me out of something, you know, mentally, emotionally, and everything else. But it also was something that I just kept going with, and I enjoy, and I enjoy watching it every time it's on. So I really want to see where the story goes. It's one of those where you just open a book, it really captivated you, has its ups and downs, kind of like a roller coaster ride, but you have to go with that and run with it. Now, mind you, there's going to be characters in there that you love, and we do love, and some of those people die.
Yeah.
And that's how the show is. Robert has expressed it many times, but I don't think he's thought of Andrew taking that plunge himself and saying, hey, I'm taking myself out of the show. So the only thing I could get out of this was, I don't think it has to do with money predominantly with Andrew. I think Andrew's been dealing with this because he lives in the UK, mm-hmm. and he has to live here X amount of months to film. So he's away from his family, his friends. And I'm sure he wants to do something more with his career. And I'm pretty sure it got to the point of where season 7 was, where he started thinking, well, I want to do that. And then when they made a change or the turn of events with, I would say with Carl being written off.
Yeah.
So once he got written off, and yes, that had to do with a bit of money, I believe, and contract. And then he started seeing everything with Lauren, and he probably had been thinking, maybe Game of Thrones or that Hobbit show that's going on Hulu or whatever, and Netflix. You know, he's probably thinking there's more that he could do. and maybe he gave this almost 10 years. Literally, it's almost 10 years of his life. Because think about it. It was filming before 2010.
Yeah.
And so they filmed it. That was new at the time. When the show came on, I first looked for where I could go for a convention where these people were at. Could not find them at all. And it took me about 2 or 3 years before I found a convention. And then, you know, they did Walker Stalker. But yeah, I was able to see Norman Reedus and a few other people at certain conventions. But then they created the Walker Stalker, and then the Walker Stalker actually showed up around my area around 2014. But, you know, it's something that I'm going to continue to watch regardless whether I have to see it through.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's kind of like those days of MASH where, it's like you started watching the show or you grew up with the show and you have to see where these characters go, even if they're gone.
It's, you know, in the sense of, you know, definitely different universe, but like how I could also maybe like, I do like these stories. Like, I like this world. I like the universe. And, you know, the one thing that pops off my head is like, you know, it's like Star Trek. You know, it's like, there's been so many iterations of that. Some good, some bad, but it's like the universe in itself, and we have fear. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, give the guy a break. It's been 10 years. You know, like, I get how it was based on. And, of course, you know, I'm going to watch it regardless if, you know, whatever that happens. But, you know, there's definitely more room for other groups, other story, other characters, you know, different regions. Like, we haven't been over to, you know, Europe. Whatever happened over there, you know, like,
there was a comic with Europe.
Well, I haven't read that then,
because it was a free comic, and it was based off of Rick Grimes' brother.
Really? Yes. Well, but was it Robert Kirkman like inspired, or just someone just did it?
Robert Kirkman, no, it was on Image. You at the time. You could literally pay whatever you felt that it was. It was a digital comic. They weren't going to release it in print. Okay. But they had it for a while. I have it somewhere. I kept it as a PDF. And it was a story about Rick Grimes' brother, who is in, I believe, France, and when the apocalypse happened.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into that, because I never, I've only been like just basically to Whispers, just the beginning.
Yeah. Well, also with the comic, the way it is now, it's far different from the show. So I think a lot of those comic book thumpers are out there going, we can't use that as a guideline anymore. You know, look at Fear. We don't even know where it's going now.
Right. Right.
And right. And with the Prime show, I kind of like that, and I mentioned it on another podcast, and I'll say it. Yeah, I was on the Walker Stalkers podcast, and I told one of the hosts there, I said, throw away your comic books. Yeah, this is a whole new story at this point. And I said that that was the night of Carl dying on the show. It was the end, and that was the end of Carl Grimes. And I said, well, you know, this is a new era. It's going a different path from the comic books. So we don't know where it's going. So that's fine with me. You know, mind you, the comic book was, and it still is the story of Rick Grimes' life and who he has. Carl is still alive. Sorry, spoilers out there, people that read the comic, or don't read the comic. Carl is still alive in the comic. Rick is still alive in the comic. And there's a few other people that are still, you know, alive that we like. But the thing is that you can't use that as a guidebook. And I think maybe that's where they went astray, but they lost a lot of the people because people started priding on certain characters. They loved Carl as much as they wanted him to be in the house. They loved Carl in some way because Rick loved Carl and that was his life. Now, if they do away with Maggie's become a popular standpoint. We don't know. There's that whole story arc of the baby. Does she have the baby? What's the baby's name? what happens to her this coming season? Because all we know is Whiskey Cavalier is coming out and she's signed and all she's doing is these six episodes. And now we're getting this whole story of Rick leaving or Andrew Lincoln leaving as Rick. So how could they change that story? How could they get rid of both of them? Maybe this, altercation between Rick and Maggie come to some sort of collide and season nine, it might be a year and a half later, but maybe both groups have progressed. Negan is somewhere in prison with long hair and a beard. and she's still pissed and she's going to take action. And out of the blue, she takes action. Maybe when she tries to take action against Negan directly, Rick gets involved and maybe they are both dispatched at the same time. Or maybe they both come to realize that they need to walk away. They're not leaders and they have to walk away and they just walk off in the sunset. But, you know, and there's also talks about Danai Gurira leaving too, but we don't know that for a fact. So I would not want to see Michonne leave either, but you know, everybody's career is growing and they're going different paths.
And that's something that us as fans and viewers, and especially in this universe, like we do have to kind of be like real that, you know, a change is hard, but you know, there's a lot of ways that the story can continue and still be awesome.
Yeah, for all we know, they're prepping us and having Morgan come back after the aftermath and come mid-season in season nine. Morgan, John Dory, Althea.
Yeah, I've heard it.
come over and it becomes one whole story.
I've heard of theories too that they're like, you know, possibly like they could be merging Fear and The Walking Dead together and just being one show. But, yeah, we'll see, I guess.
We won't know, and we won't know until October of 2018. And
well, we'll know something at Comic-Con. they'll have to spill something about the season.
I don't know. Well, I like watching Comic-Con on YouTube because I can never get there, but you know, it's fun to get some of the information, but I have a funny feeling that they're not going to release anything regarding the leaving, and they're going to state, and that it's dependent too on who's going to be there, because we don't even know if Andrew Lincoln's going to be there. Yeah. They haven't had a call sheet. You don't know if they'll bring them. Maybe they'll just bring specific people and he bows out for this time.
That could be true, and that would be interesting.
Yep.
Well, all right. Well, that's all we have. So to submit your feedback, your theories, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback where you can submit text or audio or use the SpeakPipe widget. You can call 304-837-2278. Or like most people, post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. And this coming episode, we should still have a Thursday deadline.
Tuesday.
Tuesday deadline, which I did not get the date. Is that the right date? Yeah. Deadline for submitting feedback on this next episode is Tuesday, June 12th at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. But definitely stay tuned to Facebook in case something needs to happen. Hopefully Brian will join us. He, as far as I understand, is moving. So hopefully that will be done and he can join us for next week. Another way to connect with us besides the Facebook group, we're also on Twitter, and that's at WalkingDeadGSM.
The best way that you can support us is by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. While you're there, give us a rating or a review.
All righty. So, Mark, where else can listeners find you?
You could find me on the Next Level Podcast Network. I'm on Panels to Pixels with my co-host, Steve Brown. We're currently on the Jessica Jones season one. And you can leave our feedback on our Facebook page, which is Panels to Pixels, or email us at panelstopixels1@gmail.com and listen to us through whatever means, either Google Play or iTunes.
Awesome. Besides, obviously, this show, Brian also hosts on here and the Star Trek Discovery podcast, which is also with the Golden Spiral Media Network. And I don't have any shout outs, and I've been so busy, so I haven't had much extracurricular activities besides baseball and selling tickets, which Cubs so far have been doing good. So I'm, you know, that makes me money.
Cool.
All right. Season 4, Episode 8, No One's Gone. We don't know who it's written by yet or directed by. And the description is, Madison fights to preserve the life she's worked so hard to build. And Morgan tries to do the right thing. That should be interesting. Morgan does the right thing. Or tries to do the right thing. Bye, Charlie. I'll just, to me, I'm like, okay, you tried.
You see help. You, Charlie.
Sorry. All right. Well, so until next time, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night.
Good night, everybody.